Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, episode 958 for Wednesday, the 17th of July, 2024. I'm your host, Connor, joined by Harry.
Hello!
Just us today, and we'll be discussing how the assassination attempt on Trump broke the left, what exactly is a threat to democracy, I'm doing the documentary that Matt Walsh hasn't yet, and how diversity lost us the Euros again. Harry's forcing me to talk about football.
I mean, I don't really care about football either. It's about the media narrative around it. Do you care about football?
I don't give a shit.
Oh, that's all right. No. So we're both in the same boat here. Last time I had Bo and Harrison to try and basically like carry the whole segment for me. I must have said maybe three or four sentences that whole time. This time we get to struggle through it together.
So. I care about Anglophobia. So at least that's an angle we can
Either way, this pain is shared.
Yes, we're in solidarity here. And speaking of things that's going to be painful, I'm going to go through how to rebuild the right today on Tomlinson Talks. I did have one or two guests lined up who were relatively high profile, but they've had to ask to reschedule. But don't worry, those politicians shall be back on soon, eventually. So I'm going to go
shame.
Through.
Would have been really interesting.
Yeah,
well, next time.
Be a future thing. So I'm just going to go through NatCon, VP pick, conservative leadership race, and the reform reshuffle, which has led a lot of people to lose faith in the party. But I suppose before we jump into it as well,
I've got to say you kind of look sponsored, right? Now.
Yeah, quite exactly. Hey, I'm giving Chris Williamson
need
as much
a stitch-on badge on your jacket as well.
I'll have a sort of rolling Chiron on my forehead, like I'm a Times Square billboard. Before we do start your segments, I have been told that we're doing Rumble rants and the like live now. And before we even started, Axis the Eternal has now signed up as a monthly supporter. So thank you very much for your continued support.
Yeah, we'll read the Rumble rants as they come in at the end of each segment. I think that's what we're doing at the moment. So if you want to get them read out, send them in right now and we'll take the time to read them and answer the questions as we go through.
Excellent. Kick things off.
So cheers. So yeah, the Trump shooting has inspired quite a lot of reactions. There are some major reactions, which I'm not going to touch on too much today because yes, I'm talking about Destiny. I've got a full segment planned that I'm going to do on him tomorrow because his absolute meltdown requires space all its own.
It was entirely predictable as well. Not being funny, lots of people platformed Destiny as a pro-Israel left-winger in the last 6 months, but he's always hated us. He's always been a non-credible human being. Someone said
he's not the one reasonable liberal.
No, he literally pimps out his wife for other men to have
ex-wife.
Sex with. Ex-wife. Predictably so. Also, apparently there was a time where he might be coming to the UK and there might have been a contemplation to do a debate here. I'm glad to have been always against that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't think there's much to be gained from speaking to him, especially after how he's revealed himself. But that's not what this segment is about. This segment is a more general examination of how the Trump assassination attempt has broken the left, mainly in the rhetoric, because a lot of them seem to want to backpedal, but it's maybe a bit too late for some of them to backpedal. They've gone a bit too far. And then there are some on the left, the kind of blue and on left, who just think the thing outright was staged from the beginning, that the guy who died, Corey Compadre, was that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, that he was either some kind of crisis actor prop or was sacrificed for the sake of making Donald Trump look good, which I've got to say, you know,
that's evil.
That is evil. Whatever you want to say about Thomas Crook, the man who fired the shots and is, thank God, dead, I don't think he would be that good a shot to be able to narrowly miss Donald Trump's head and catch his ear on purpose.
At the exact moment he slightly turns it to look at an illegal immigration grant.
You know, those rehearsals, if they do have something to do with this, those must have been some very thorough rehearsals.
I want to point this out. They tried suing Alex Jones for more than the GDP...
Successfully
sued. More than the GDP of France they originally asked for.
Oh, the $2.75 trillion.
Yeah.
That was the number... I looked into that. Not just more than the GDP of France, almost the entire GDP of Africa.
Yes, quite. Anyone gonna take this up with the blue and on crowd who are openly denying the death of a man in a shooting? No?
Well, perhaps. If the same argument that applies to Alex Jones applies in this case, then if the people who are the family members of Corey end up getting harassed by insane left-wingers, and there are plenty of them to go around, like Antifa, for instance, if they end up getting harassed as a result of all of this, well then, yeah, they should be legally liable to be sued for potentially billions of dollars.
Yeah, and I hope that never happens, but if it does, I hope the right people assist them with that lawsuit.
Yeah, if the Alex Jones standard applies, which, I mean, it's in the books now.
It's now case
law. It's in the law books, yeah. But anyway, one of the first things that I wanted to talk about was the Tenacious D reaction. everybody's favorite band when they're a retarded 13-year-old. Sad to say, I include myself in that crowd.
I was never that fussed about Tenacious D, but I did grow up repeatedly watching School of Rock. So to see Jack Black's fall from grace has been very disappointing.
It's not that surprising, though, is it? It's not really that surprising. Jack Black is the guy who presents himself as a slovenly, lazy slob and unsurprisingly has the kind of opinions you would expect from a person like that. Either way, the big controversy around it was this. At a recent gig in Australia over the weekend following the shooting, Kyle Gass, the guitarist, was having a birthday celebration, and this was what was said on stage when asked, "What would you like to wish for your birthday?"
Don't miss Trump next time. Thank you.
So funny. So funny, a guy died, Trump almost died. I believe two other people were critically injured in the shooting. So yeah, next time just don't miss. Great so, one. Good joke.
I've seen people excuse this as an edgy joke. I'd like to say two things. Number one, as you said, Corey died. He's left a family behind. They're absolutely distraught. And so there's no consideration given to that in their delusional hatred of Donald Trump. But also, I don't think this is purely a joke. I don't. Because you know in your gut when you get... when people are exaggerating things for effect and it's funny and it's usually joking because they have you in the same sphere of social consideration. This feels like a, we actually talk about this behind the scenes moment and therefore I think it's acceptable to joke about, and only the reaction of the crowd and the wider media has made me realize I'm now in a delusional death cult. And so I think this is a mask slippage moment. I don't think it's a joke. I think it's said with half sincerity.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. I mean... do we really believe that the vast majority of those in the leftist media sphere don't wish that Donald Trump ate that bullet?
They've already said they did. So, yeah.
I mean, do we really believe that that was just a joke? That was like if you get somebody, like if you're a woman and you get some guy in DMs going, huh, wouldn't it be funny if you started sending me nudes or something? No, that's the truth. And you want to hide it as a joke.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, plausible deniability. Predictable results came from this because people weren't very happy. One of the most amusing results was that an Australian senator, Ralph Babbitt, called for the immediate deportation of the band. Pretty based response, if you asked me.
Well, they deported Novak Djokovic for less. They deported him because he tried to play in the Australian Open without getting the COVID vaccine.
He actually points this out in the letter that you see here. Australia wrongly locked up Novak Djokovic and deported him because he allegedly undermined public trust in vaccination. Allowing Tenacious D to remain in Australia after calling for the death of a president is unthinkable, and it affirms the weakness of our current prime minister. But don't worry, everybody. Don't worry. It turns out Tenacious D, Jack Black, and Kyle Gass both had a change of heart and realized after the public blowback what a terrible thing this was and how it was beyond the pale and how they shouldn't have said it. Phil, I love you. All that remains, great band, but it doesn't deserve praise. I'm sorry to say, Jack Black putting on his Instagram, oh, I was blindsided by what was said on that show on Sunday. Ignore me laughing along.
Ignore me a week before the debate getting up on stage in American flag dungarees and endorsing Biden.
Yep. I would never condone hate speech or encourage political violence in any form. After much reflection, I no longer feel it is appropriate to continue to the Tenacious D tour, and all future creative plans are on hold. I'm grateful to the fans for their support and understanding. So the way that we're being shown this right now is that after a pang of conscience, after a hit on the head that made him see the light and realize, oh, that's a really horrible thing to say, maybe we should take some penance and step back and consider our actions. They spontaneously decided to cancel the rest of their tour and creative plans. Could it be that, or could it be, as this person decided to speculate, that all or most of the venues decided to cancel on them because now you're a security risk and our insurance won't cover you? And also, I'd imagine, one or two of those venue owners themselves probably just decided, you know what? I don't want this. If you're going to be doing this kind of thing on my stage, I don't want the bad publicity. And there's some more evidence for this as well, given that immediately following it, Kyle Gass lost his agent.
Ah,
That'll be it.
Yeah, the agent dropped him. We have parted ways after what happened in Sydney. According, it says Michael Green, who was head of Green Talent. So, no sympathy. No sympathy. At the end of the day, the left has been coming for the right, cancelling the right for saying clearly obvious and true things. James Damore, who I don't even know if was a conservative, was cancelled for saying that maybe women aren't interested in STEM as much as men are. Other people have been cancelled for saying that men can't be women. All sorts of things that are clear and obvious and true on the face of it. Maybe we shouldn't allow men into women's bathrooms and saunas or changing rooms. They get cancelled for it. These people cheer it on, treat it as though you deserve the death penalty for having said these things.
They tried to assert that Brett Kavanaugh was a gang rapist on the allegations that were completely unsubstantiated by three women and had suffered no consequences for that. They almost had him killed because an Antifa nutcase showed up outside his family home, ready to tie him up and shoot him. And so when they cheer all that on, but then suddenly wish for the death of a president and suddenly get consequences for that, good. Good, yeah. you're being strung up by your own standard. Don't care.
It's the cultural and political environment that you have fostered. And so I have absolutely no sympathy for this whatsoever. You'll see no tears from me. And then there are the other typical leftist responses, which you expect, which is when Donald Trump made an appearance at the RNC and people decided to chant fight, 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 which was pretty badass, I can't lie. Because that was one of the more iconic moments, probably the most iconic moment from this whole event over the weekend, was Trump getting up, pumping his fist in the air and shouting, fight.
It was his Iwo Jima photo, yeah.
Yeah, clearly it was a show of courage and heroism and bravery, which I don't think anyone in the West has seen for years, if not maybe even decades. So of course people are going to do that, but that of course means it's Hitler.
Oh, the Straussian reductio ad Hitlerium is so exhausting.
This is Dean Obladiah from Sirius XM saying
they're still on.
Apparently so. I didn't know that people still watch them. Instantly conjures up rallies from 1930s Germany. These people literally see any group of people being positive in a large crowd and go, oh my God, this is just like Hitler.
Well, it's white people, let's be honest. Not any group of people. I mean, you can do the Black Power salute and call for genocide like Julius Malema in South Africa. And that's just fiery rhetoric. It's a protest song.
That's missing context, Connor. Yes. I think we need to consider the cultural environment that was said in.
Yeah, like massacring farmers.
Yeah, exactly. Which is perfectly fine as long as they're white. Anyway, the other one, which is that, again, as I've mentioned, apparently, because Trump is a Chad and behaved in a Chadish way, this means that it was an attempted assassination, i.e. staged. So because of the fact that he went golfing the day after one of his supporters was killed, this means that it was staged and we should condemn him. Donald Trump has sent his condolences to the family, to the, I keep forgetting how to say the surname, was it Compadre?
I don't necessarily know how to pronounce it unless it's written down, but it's Corey's family.
Yeah, to Corey's family. And also, he wasn't responsible for the death. The shooter was responsible for the death. The fact that Donald Trump, the day after something that would be ordinarily traumatic to most people, was up and about having fun on a golf course, pretty remarkable. You know, I don't think Biden could do anything like
that. Biden isn't up and about when he's not being shot at.
Yeah, I mean, Biden would need a week to recover from trying to go up a flight of stairs. So the fact that Trump can show strength and endurance like this, they see as fearful, they don't understand it, so it must be fake. And then again, there's more people just outright saying it, like this person, I'm sorry to be this guy right now, and I await more details. But this just seems really convenient to happen right now after the world woke up to Project 2025. It's fishy as F. Again, sorry.
Because Trump said he disavowed parts of it. Project 2025 has been available to read as a book for ages. Like, I spoke to the people at NatCon that had written it, and they were like, yeah, the policy platform's just been open for a while. It's now become a meme that, like, Project 2025 will return Pizza Hut to the old decor. Like, it's because it's so absurd.
Project 2025 will get my support when it returns McDonald's fries to, what was it, beef batter?
Tallow.
Yeah, tallow, beef tallow.
Project 2025 will feed my abandoned Tamagotchi. Like,
It will rescue my Nintendogs. Thank God, I've been neglecting them for decades at this point.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. And probably the most libelous and lawsuit-worthy one that I've seen was the one that Tim Wise deleted. Tim anti-white hatred Wise said that fist pump S after Trump was shot is too perfect. No way someone thinks to do that after an actual assassination attempt. I'm sorry, Tim. He obviously has balls and you don't. It's what a MAGA script writer would write, though.
Notably deleted because his lawyer probably advised him to.
But in the time that it was up, 28,000 likes at least. So there's a significant portion of people that we can assume agree with this.
Conspiracy theorists, one might say.
Yeah, blue anon, I think, is the appropriate term for them. But of course, this is completely wrong. And if we're going by the Alex Jones standard that has been set, liable to get a lawsuit, because this could lead to harassment of the of Corey's family and anybody else who was involved at the rally. I mean, come on. And Elon Musk said as much, saying that those lawsuits are coming. Yeah, they probably are. And then you get, I know that there was the segment yesterday and talk about Trump being very popular with Black America. And I can see with certain sections of Black America, now he has become quite popular because he is, as they are saying, the real N president, because he's been shot, he's been charged with felonies, the media is after him. In many cases, some are saying that he's more Black than the ghetto.
He's got baby mamas.
He does have baby mamas and he does sleep with porn stars. So yeah, he's everything that someone like 50 Cent wants to aspire to. And 50 Cent has put out his support for Donald Trump. I still don't think that he's going to get the vast majority of that demographic in America. I'd be surprised if he even got, say, 20%. Because you still see things like this coming out where I'm so glad Black Twitter know this S was fraud, because I was about to be worried. But then there's the unfunny sketches of this.
If you want to really see something that's sad, take a look at what happened.
Hey, I got some old ketchup in my pocket. Oh, hold on, let me taste it.
Yeah, from the same people that brought you We Was Kangs, look at these AI images of Black royal family members, the monarchy.
From the same people that believe Jussie Smollett.
Yep, 83,000 likes, 5.6 million views. Yep, and then you get people pointing out that, isn't it kind of sus that if you look at this threat back in 2016, you see how quickly they get Donald Trump away from the stage when there's a threat of a shooter in the audience, as opposed to what happened the other day, you know, where they let him stand up.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens after 8 years of DEI and the Secret Service.
Well, it's also amazing after what happens when they've already confirmed the shooter is down.
Yes.
Obviously, there is still a potential active threat, but as far as they're aware, the threat has been neutralized. And also, DEI clearly has a part to play in this, as well as the suspicious questions that we can ask around the overall way that the Secret Service dealt with the situation leading up to the shooting. I'm not going to throw out any suggestions there, but I do think that you can criticize at least incompetence and also
a worrying permissiveness for opportunity to someone to take a crack at Trump.
Especially after the head of the Secret Service said that that roof that the shooter was on had already been scoped by them and they could have put someone on there, but there was a slope, which was far too dangerous to put a Secret Serviceman on.
The slope that the Secret Serviceman that had the sniper that actually shot back at the shooter was on was far steeper. The slope on the top of the White House where they're permanently stationed is steeper.
Yeah, it's bollocks.
Yeah.
Clearly bollocks, and I think it's perfectly reasonable to ask questions about that. But to somebody who gets almost 10 million views, 145,000 likes, the difference in two situations means staged. Staged. And obviously, you know it's always staged because they make it just way too obvious. Way too obvious, so that this person who has the Twitter at of a bot, let's be perfectly honest here, first name numbers, can recognize it. That's how you know.
Yeah, let's say we're delusional schizophrenics and we think this must be staged, because the other one, which had fewer contingencies baked into it, was caught earlier. So the one where they noticed a guy who had a firearm who somehow got past security, didn't fire a shot off, didn't injure anyone, and they got Trump off stage. That's not stage. But the one where he shot multiple shots, we've got the bullets whizzing past Trump on film and on camera. It clipped his ear, I think, twice, actually. You've got his part of his ear being blown off. You can see it. A man died and has bereaved his family. Two other people were injured. And we've got video footage from people, I assume, involved in the whole scripted event, standing around the perimeter, yelling at police officers, "Hey, there's a guy up there." I assume all of this is just one elaborate WWE performance.
Clearly, I mean, he's got experience. He's got experience. He got Stone Cold stunned, so maybe it was Austin holding the rifle
this
the whole time.
Just
it only makes sense. I just want to point out as well that the last Russian on Rumble sent in $2 and said to us, "The Trump playing golf the day after being shot was community noted. Apparently a video from 2023. At least that was the note that showed up in my notifications." I don't know about that because I believe it was reported on in the news as well that he was out and about golfing the day after.
He'd be perfectly entitled to take his mind off of it, whether or not that is the case.
And was speaking to people. But the video itself might be from 2023. I can't confirm that. But I have seen news reports saying that he was out and about and was speaking to people and was in a very good mood, very healthy, holding himself very comfortably, which is what you would want to see from the leader of the potential future leader,
presumptive leader
of the free world. And then you get more retardation from Black TikTok, like this one.
I mean, it's a little weird, you know, that this is America and shooters don't miss unless they're hired to. People often flee the scene of a shooting, but these people did not. Instead, they crouched down, not enough to protect themselves, just enough so they could keep recording. And when they saw that the Cheeto Puff was okay, they erupted into applause, and the Secret Service still did not rush him off a stage because there was no active threat perceived, even though it had not been declared that the shooter had been apprehended. And I'm just wondering something that I can't say out loud.
It was declared, though. You got it from the audio because they're right next to the microphone.
You can hear it. You can even hear Trump say, "Let me get my shoe."
Yeah.
I mean, come on. This is, I mean, obviously not to question the logic of Wakandan Einstein. But
I hate you.
That opening statement of shooters don't miss unless they're hired to. Ah, yes. Because nobody in American history has ever missed a shot.
Drive-by is famous for their accuracy.
Oh, well, I mean, they were paid to shoot, to miss, obviously. Clearly, the ghetto has a lot of backhanded deals going on.
They're just all dead shot.
I mean, and these are people who think that John Wick is real life.
How many likes does Scott?
Well, this is actually St. Clair posting this. But it is reflective of a certain attitude. The fact that these got so as many likes as they did, the fact that Tim Wise was able to get as many likes as he did, reflects a certain attitude which has emerged from the Blue Anon faction of the liberal left and the liberal media establishment, which is quickly being swept under the rug.
So they all want Trump dead, but they can't believe that someone would also try to actually take a crack. That's their line of logic.
Well,
here.
Presumably because they, especially like someone like Tim Wise, would presumably be legally accountable for the fact that they have been drumming up this atmosphere of fear, this environment where everybody is saying that Trump is going to be the new Hitler. We already know that he tried to usurp power through January 6th, etc., etc. And so they create the environment where you say, Hitler is the worst thing that ever happened in humanity. Wouldn't you like to go back and kill Hitler? But we can't do that. So here's a new Hitler. Leave the rest unsaid. He's going to be a dictator, take away your rights, force all of the women in the world to be a handmaid's tale. You create that environment, and then something actually happens, and there's the disconnect of saying, well, it can't be my fault. I can't have done anything to contribute to this, so it must be staged. It must have been written and played out like a TV show, because all of these people interpret reality through television in the first place. They get all of their understanding of the world through Marvel films and TV shows and John Wick. And then there's the other aspect of it, which is possibly that these people are now going to try and sweep it under the rug, or at least these mainstream people, because they could be legally accountable for this after Alex Jones. There's a lot to it. But also, I do think that there is going to be a bit of a sweeping under the rug of this kind of rhetoric now, because it seems that I've seen people talk about that the extreme left is going to get dropped in all likelihood by some of the more mainstream factions, because you even see Joe Biden come out and say we need unity. Because remember, when one politician gets attacked, Donald Trump, that opens up the threat for all of the others. I don't think it's out of any actual sympathy for Donald Trump. It's naked self-interest, as these things always are. If Donald Trump's getting shot at, might be me next time. There you go. But one of the best examples of the absolute lunacy that's coming from this is End Wokeness posting this Vox Pops that James Klug posted, where he's going around, I think it looks like San Francisco or Los Angeles, somewhere where there'll be lots of leftists, and asking them what they think about the assassination attempt. And let's hear what some of these people have to say.
It's a false flag.
False flag.
Yeah, false flag.
People, somebody died and two people injured. What do you think about that?
False flag.
False flag.
I thought it was magnificently staged. It was professionally done. It almost looked real.
Wait. Staged by who?
Oh, by Mr. Trump, of course.
I think this whole thing is staged.
You think it was staged?
Yeah.
It depends on everybody's view. Yeah.
View of the assassination attempt? What do you think? Does it kind of depend on where you're standing, whether or not you agree with the assassination attempt or disagree with it?
I just don't see that being the truth, but that's my... I'd rather just not make any comment.
Really quick, what are you talking about the truth? What do you mean? Oh, you just don't believe it was an assassination attempt?
No.
Please don't. No. We're so anti-Trump, I don't even want to...
Was it a bad thing, though? Was it a bad thing? Would you condemn it?
Oh, that he got shot at? Of course.
Yeah, you never
right.
do that.
Of
that's
course,
all.
You don't do that.
That's all messed up.
Yeah, that's really bad.
She says, smirking.
Was it staged? Probably.
Staged?
Yeah.
Okay, so you think Trump maybe staged a fake assassination for support? Okay.
As far as I can tell, and this is just my opinion, that guy definitely does think it was staged. But I think that the rest of it you can see there, that's pretty representative. It's a load of people saying, no, of course I condemn it, but it was fake. Which is ridiculous. And again, people have already been making a few jokes about this that, I wouldn't do that.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that. So, yeah, it's broke the left in all new ways that I didn't think would be happening, but it's always interesting to see, and that's all I have to say on that. Let's go find out what is a threat to democracy.
Excellent. Fantastic. What do we call a threat to democracy? It's a phrase that we've heard bandied around frequently ever since Donald Trump, let's say, had the election lost for him. And so... I thought I'd do a Matt Walsh-style investigation into this, mainly because we both enjoy reading and listening to political theory,
mm-hmm.
and so we can get to the bottom of the roots of why they can characterize Donald Trump as a threat to democracy when he's a democratically elected president. Where's the line of logic here? Is it purely Machiavellian word power games? Are they really that smart, or is there some connective tissue to what the true believers actually believe and what comes out of their mouths? And so this is, of course, the actual Trump shooting footage. It's been on live television, it's circulated all through Twitter, and yet there are still some crazy people, as you covered in your last segment, who believe that this is fake. Now, I'm not going to relitigate all the details of that because we did excellent coverage on Monday. What I want to say is that there are lots of questions as to how this entire scenario happened. I mean, the head of the Secret Service decided not to deploy someone on that roof. Instead, she decided to deploy people within the building that the shooter was laying prone on, which would have blocked the line of sight by, I don't know, things like walls. That might be a bit
of a problem. If that is pure incompetence and negligence, then it's to such an unacceptable level that it's ridiculous to consider that that's how bad things have got.
Quite.
If you attribute it to that.
She also said that she wanted the Secret Service to be arbitrarily 30% women, and as we know, with other institutions like the police or the army, that means they lower the fitness requirements to meet their quotas because men and women have different strengths and weaknesses.
Again, these are people who filter reality through TV and movies. They watch something like Atomic Blonde, and they assume that Charlize Theron can actually take out 5 strong, tall men in real life.
With a stiletto. Also, she's good friends with the Bidens, and apparently Jill Biden had an event in the same state, and some of the Secret Service detail were pulled off of that and went to Jill Biden's event.
But she also the former CEO of Pepsi?
She was, yeah. She went from being a frontline Secret Service person to head of security at the PepsiCo Corporation.
Oh, right.
And then straight back to the Biden administration because the Biden team reappointed her. But something else that should be looked at is the fact that there was a bill earlier this year from Bernie Thompson, who's a Mississippi congressman, who sought to strip Trump entirely of the Secret Service detail. So he wanted him to have absolutely no Secret Service, even though he's a former president. He's ranking member of the House Committee on Homeland Security, and he introduced legislation to strip convicted felons sentenced to prison of Secret Service protection. It was co-sponsored by several other Democrats. A source in Thompson's office told Newsweek at the time that the bill would affect anyone who is handed a sentence for a felony and would otherwise receive protection from the Secret Service. Quote, nobody should have special treatment, and that happens to include the former presidents. This was targeted at Trump to ensure that he was in a vulnerable position for folks like Thomas Crooks, who wanted to take a shot at him and very nearly claimed his life and plunged America into another civil war and possibly the world into a world war. I mean, Franz Ferdinand kicked off the First World War for less. Mm. He was an archduke in Austria-Hungary. He was not the president, the presumptive president of the United States. So this could have really destabilized the entire American empire.
Well, again, I don't necessarily know if it would have descended straight into a civil war or something, but you can be guaranteed, as I mentioned in the last segment, that if someone takes a pop at Donald Trump, if you as part of the political class don't immediately do something to try and calm everybody's nerves, then you are also part of that political class. You have opened the floodgates to other people making attempts on you.
Quite. And so let's say, let's take the factors of its incompetence, its DEI hires, it's an active attempt to endanger Trump's life by taking away his Secret Service detail, potential conspiracies about Crooks being known to the intelligence services at the time, like it was with the Buffalo shooter, for example. Let's take those off the table and say, who's culpable for this, truly? Because it's not just the shooter, and it's not just the incompetence of the Secret Service. It's the entire media and political establishment who have been scaremongering about Trump, relying on Leo Strauss's reductio ad Hitlerium for ages, including Mike Godwin. The progenitor of Godwin's law created an article for the Washington Post that said, yes, it's fair to compare Trump to Hitler, don't let me stop you. So they've constantly been reframing him as what Renaud
Mukin would
call.
I've seen people post that recently. Is that a recent article that he
last
wrote?
Couple of years.
Last couple of years. Oh, so, sorry.
Yes. Carry. So this is what Renaud Camus would call the second career of Adolf Hitler. They've whipped themselves into such a frenzy that they've made the modus operandi of the modern managerial state preventing the rise of a second Hitler. And so that's in the cultural minds of everyone watching this. And they know that their base is petrified of this. So they use this imagery, whether disingenuously or because they really believe it, to put Trump in what Biden called the bullseye or the crosshairs. And that's why his life is under threat. So let's look at some of the pre-assassination rhetoric. Let's prosecute the case against these guys, right? Joe Biden. Probably the highest office in the land, whether or not he actually remembers he occupies it. A couple of days, what was it, the day before? Oh no, this was on the day, wasn't it? July the 13th. There we go. Americans want a president, not a dictator. Right, so he's immediately setting President Trump, if he takes over Joe Biden, through democratically elected mandate, with a free and fair election, which is what Trump's been pushing for, as a dictator. So if the American project is to overthrow tyrants, as Thomas Jefferson once wrote in a very contentious letter, then that's legitimizing violence immediately against Trump for those who want to protect democracy or protect the republic. Okay? What else? What about Joe Biden right before the shooting? Most importantly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, Trump is a threat to this nation. Okay, so positioning his political opponent as an existential threat. We constantly hear about, as Auron McIntyre of you have said, that if you could go back in time and shoot baby Hitler, would you do it? It's like, well, the reason that's a problematic moral quandary is because it's baby Hitler. So nobody wants to kill a baby. But if it's adult Hitler, of course you'd take a shot at Hitler. Well, if you're directly saying that Trump is akin to or actually the second incarnation of Adolf Hitler, then why not be a successful Project Valkyrie?
I mean, in the past few weeks, wasn't there a New Statesman cover, was it?
Have you got it? Are you referencing this one?
Oh, yeah, that one. Oh, the New Republic, sorry. Yeah, American fascism, what it would look like with Trump literally as Hitler.
Yeah, and look who it's...
June 2024.
Look who it's written by. Brian Stelter put out a tweet right after the assassination attempt. Don't be fooled by those in the media freak show. The vast majority of Americans have so much in common. We're not at each other's throats over Trump and Biden. We're not in the political arena at all. We're on the porch, at the pool, in the pews. We're not fighting on here. Oh, really? Brian Stelter? You mean the man who contributed to this magazine?
I'm so glad that Brian Stelter can come out and talk against the divisive rhetoric splitting the nation.
And this is exactly why the idea of this is Auron and Dr. Parvini's bet that the woke will be put away, especially after this. I don't think that's even possible because I think there are quite a few people here that are true believers. And I think that they cannot be contained, probably because they're not as smart as the conniving higher-ups like Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat Party. And even if you sack them from a primetime cable news slot on CNN, like with Brian Stelter, he will slink off to another magazine or another speech gig and with camera phones everywhere, there's going to be clips of it, and they'll say this exact deranged stuff to whip up the Bluenons into a murderous frenzy. I think there's no containing this. There's no putting it back in the bottle. You've genuinely deluded some of these commentators to the extent of where they think that Donald Trump is himself the reincarnation of Hitler.
Well, the thing that a lot of people have pointed out is that because Thomas Crooks was 20 years old, ever since he was 12, he has had nothing but Trump is Hitler, Trump is Hitler. He's going to take away your rights. He's going to be a dictator. He's never going to leave office. He's going to take your family's rights away. He's going to ruin your life, and he's going to kill black people and brown people for no reason.
Even though he didn't do that.
Like, Thomas Crooks is not the only 20-year-old who has grown up only with that message being thrust at him. And he's not the only 20-year-old who's crazy enough to actually internalize that.
And also, intersectionality valorizes vulnerability. They valorize mental illness. So that means they have created a cohort, a coalition of voters with this exact kind of mental predisposition to be whipped up into a deluded frenzy. You saw this with the hysteria over masks and vaccine mandates during COVID. They really wanted people who were not getting the vaccine. They were wishing death on them from COVID.
I mean, the whole COVID situation to me was a gigantic public test of public obedience. And at least 80% of people failed.
Yes, quite. And it's because empathy requires intelligence and impulse control. And lots of the people in the Democrat base don't seem to have that. And I think the Democrat higher-ups know that. And so they create this image of Trump as an existential threat, a threat to democracy, Adolf Hitler himself, to outsource what they really want to see, which is Trump dead rather than victorious, to their insane base to have plausible deniability against it. And the idea that Joe Biden's now walking this back in an interview with Lester Holt, saying, I was wrong to say to put him in the crosshairs, and I don't mean to stigmatize this. The idea that regime mouthpieces like Brian Stelter are turning around and saying, we have more in common. Well, sorry, do you not remember Joe Biden getting up at, what was it, the Pennsylvania City Hall with a blood-red background with what looks like his stormtroopers behind him? Poor Marines, or is that the Navy, standing there forced to abide by this nonsense, saying all of this about half the country.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. But there's no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that is a threat to this country. MAGA Republicans do not respect the Constitution. They do not believe in the rule of law. They do not recognize the will of the people. MAGA forces are determined to take this country backwards. Backwards to an America where there is no right to choose, no right to privacy, no right to contraception, no right to marry who you love. Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans quote a clear and present danger to our democracy. But while the threat to American democracy is real, I want to say as clearly as we can, we are not powerless in the face of these threats. MAGA Republicans have made their choice. They embrace anger. They thrive on chaos. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies.
I mean, obviously ironic for Biden, but as is oft repeated, it's not about hypocrisy, it's about hierarchy. And so he's setting this division to create, he's setting the exception. He's creating this community, literally half the country that voted for Trump, as being beyond the moral pale and therefore acceptable to be subjected to violence. And so as soon as Trump gets shot and you get Nancy Pelosi and AOC and Biden himself coming out and saying, oh, I'm horrified that the former president has been injured. I wish him well. It's like, one, no, you don't. We don't believe that. But two, you've had this rhetoric consistently across cable news, across every magazine, in every TV show, like The Boys has now been captured by it, for over a decade now, almost a decade rather. And if you truly believed as Hitler, why are you wishing for his recovery? It makes zero sense. And so we can only assume that your long track record of wishing him expunged from civilization, violently or otherwise, that's how you truly feel.
Well, again, they're trying to walk all of this back now. But the fact is, we've got the footage of you saying it. We've got hours and hours, probably days, if not weeks, of footage of every single one of these people saying rhetoric like this, outright saying, I'd like to punch Donald Trump in the face, how many times has a president been assassinated? That's one that even Johnny Depp said back in the day. Now we've got Kyle Gass saying, don't miss Trump this time. We know how you feel. We're not going to forget. And then at the beginning of this year, like you pointed out, this this Benny Thompson guy is saying, let's take away his security detail. So you create the environment that creates shooters like this. Then you try and make Trump vulnerable to the point where a shooter can get on a roof, take pot shots at him, and then one of our guys gets killed. A family man who was a firefighter, who I can only assume actually saved people's lives in the course of his work, died.
Including his daughter and his wife's life, because they were at the rally and he caught the bullet shielding them like a bloody hero.
Yes.
Joe Biden certainly doesn't treat his kids that way if you read Ashley Biden's diary.
No, he certainly doesn't.
So, infuriating. And the last one I'll end on before I move on beyond the historical record is recently Joy Reid. Now, Joy Reid is an imbecile. She genuinely has no ability to control messaging.
I didn't know that.
She's the id of the Democratic Party, and she has zero accountability. I think she's genuinely like deranged. Because do you remember there was a blog that leaked of her ages ago, of her making so-called homophobic comments? She just said, oh, it was hack, bro. Someone else wrote it for me.
I forgot that happened to her, yeah.
Yeah, so one, the Democrat Party and their media establishment decided to defend her for that. But two, she has no conscience, right? And so when she says stuff like this, right? I'll play this. It's deranged, but this is what shooters, crooks, were thinking when they were taking shots at Trump.
Just tell me who the nominee is going to be. Let me know when you guys are finished fighting amongst yourselves who I got to vote for in November to keep Hitler out the White House. That's all I want to know. Who I got?
Hitler. it's pathetic. She said Joe Biden could be in a coma and she would vote for him.
And I don't expect higher thought from Joy Reid.
No, but we'll watch in a second.
But yeah, the fact that she's still coming out with the Hitler talk.
The clip after the shooting, that her response to the shooting is what the Democrat Party truly feels. And I'll play that in a second. But I wanted to talk about, okay, so this threat to democracy line we keep hearing. What is the connective tissue here? And so there's a book that I've been going on at the moment, which is Emily Finley's Ideology of Democratism. It's very useful. It's something that I used actually in my recent conversation. Carl and I were over in America with Tim Pool and Phil Labonte discussing liberalism and democracy and the idea of the blank slate. And this was the day before the assassination attempt on Trump. So it's actually very pertinent. But something that Finley pointed out is that this sort of like Rousseauian idea of democracy, this concept of the general will, that if all people just had an environment where they could express their authentic selves and it actually all vote in the same way, and so the government would be the collective representative of the people, it puts politics on rails because it believes that fundamentally everyone's the same underneath and it's just civilization and poverty and inequality getting in the way. And so the true expression of democracy is to act on behalf of the people's best interest, to take those things away, and then we'll all end up acting the same. And so Trump is actually an enemy to democracy in their minds because he's asserting patriotism, he's asserting differences, he's creating inequality through his tax cuts, and therefore he's getting in the way of true democracy, which is the foreordained outcome that we've already got because we believe that fundamentally everyone will act identically.
Well, yeah, it's the idea that if all of democracy was working properly, everybody would behave, believe in, and vote the same way that I do.
Yeah, exactly. This is why they create clientele classes. It's because they believe they are subsidizing the lifestyles of people that are in their rational self-interest. And if they do that, then they're going to reliably vote for the Democrats. And so the outcome for the Democrats is always going to be victory every single election. So if Trump comes in with populism and wrests certain issues back into public discourse and creates disagreement and moves them beyond the realm of neutral non-politics, as Schmidt would say, then it's a problem for them because populism is an interruption to their politics on rails, presuming that everyone would do exactly the same thing if just this pesky thing like culture and in-group preference weren't in the way. And so threat to democracy just genuinely means he's stopping our foreordained plan because we believe in the blank slate. That means there's absolutely no differences between peoples if culture and civilization and capitalism and the like weren't just in the way. So they're demented. They genuinely are blank slate utopians, and they just believe that they can micromanage every asset of your life so that democracy has a foreordained outcome every time. There's no negotiating these people, genuinely. I think this is what NatCon understood, right? When we went, there was actually a speech at NatCon. I forget the guy's name. David Azarod. And it's titled Enemies of the State, the Left Schmittian Politics. Mm. There was a very strong undercurrent at NatCon that this is a zero-sum game now. The most prominent speaker wasn't on the stage. Steve Bannon was meant to kick off day one. Mm. Steve Bannon is currently rotting in prison because he did not comply with the January 6th committee's summons to show up and testify. Now, bear in mind, the committee was illegitimately formed because it did not have a fair representative balance of Democrats and Republicans. They weren't appointed by the Republican committee. So there's some discord over that. And so he got conflicting legal advice. And so by not complying with that mandate to show up, he is now in a prison cell. So the idea that they would, this is up for negotiation, when they would rather see Trump literally in the crosshairs, when they wished him dead, when they want to see all of his allies imprisoned, when they have all of the January 6th tourists who were led around on a guided tour of the Capitol by the feds in solitary confinement for multiple years with harsher treatment than actual terrorists, the idea that they can just talk that out is nonsense. That's not the case. It's very worrying. If you want more on that sort of stuff, then Carl and I did a video on essentially how wokeness metastasizes into liberalism. And it's this exact kind of mentality that at root we're all identical and it's just civilization that's in the way that turns democracy from one man, one vote into you should all be producing the same outcome. And if you don't produce this outcome, like, for example, if you don't comply with a vaccine mandate, then we're just using it to weed out dissenters, people that are under a false consciousness or some kind of thing.
I will also say that if you're looking for a counterpoint to the arguments that they make in this, you can check out the multi-part series that we have on the website where you and Carl debate Josh and Stelios on the matter.
We were victorious. It was very good. So for rhetoric after the shooting, because I think that's where we need to look to see whether or not this is cynical, whether or not they truly believe that Donald Trump is the second incarnation of Adolf Hitler, whether or not that this was all for show and rhetoric and now they're actually going to put the woke away, I think we look at some of their true believers. As you've already mentioned, let's look at Destiny, who's having a very public meltdown, who is celebrating the death of Corey Comparator. And he's saying, a person caught in a crowd cheering for and supporting a traitor to this country caught astray. I'm so sad, please. You're evil. It doesn't shock me that this is your position and that you can't empathize with a grieving family, considering you have absolutely let down your son by bringing a revolving door of degenerate women into his life. You're a pathetic father. You're an awful human being. And why anyone gives you the time of day, I am shocked.
I will also, this is something I'm going to cover a little bit more in the stream tomorrow when I'm going to cover the Destiny meltdown in a lot more detail. But it's interesting when you hear him when you listen to him give his reasoning for this. It's all hinged on the idea that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist because of January 6th. But when you see him debate that subject with anybody who has just a tiny little bit of knowledge on the subject and a tiny little bit of understanding of how the legal process in America works. Like, I don't often give I'm not a huge Ben Shapiro fan, but when he debated Ben Shapiro on Lex Fiedman's podcast,
who is a lawyer,
or Glenn Greenwald, who has experience in that as well, the man comes across like a flailing emotional retard, because he doesn't actually have a leg to stand on with his legal arguments, because he's going from emotional reasoning and then picking out a few factoids here and there to justify it. And then when he's actually challenged on any of this, he doesn't have a leg to stand on. But that is still the reasoning that he's using to dance on the grave of a man who died saving his wife and child.
Yeah. Corey's death is acceptable because he allied with the faction that has interrupted the democratic process. Basically, he has stopped the car that is speeding headlong towards his progressive utopia. And so they're justified to be speed bumps on that, because it's only ever going to go in one direction, because democracy is a complete and utter straight line. It's not about the marketplace of ideas, or it's not about winning one election and coming back and reforming and listening to the mandate of the people and losing another. No, no, no. This is the great unfurling of the progressive arc of history, and any interruption to that is treacherous, is an insurrection. And so Destiny and the ilk like him believe that they should be taken out.
Well, I mean, I'm going to go a bit more ad hom than that. I believe it's mainly because people like Destiny are spiteful mutants, resentful munchkins, whatever term you want to use for them.
Yes, quite. Well, a lot of their politics is projections, as Nietzsche himself once observed. The New York Times didn't decide to interrupt their coverage. They didn't decide to rescind the papers. This came out the day after, saying, giant splash page, he failed the test of leadership and betrayed America. Voters must reject him in November. Oh, I'm sure you just want the ballot box. I'm sure that's just what the New York Times wishes for Trump. And this is Joy Reid, right? So I'm going to play this Joy Reid clip, because this is at the Republican National Convention on MSNBC's panel after the shooting. And she is telling all of our other hosts not to refrain from criticizing Trump and ramping up the rhetoric and calling him Hitler and putting his life on the line. after he has already been shot at.
Universal kind of reaction that I'm getting, whether it's civilians or, you know, professionals, is really a deep concern and lack of confidence in not us at this table or us at MSNBC, but us as the media writ large. Hmm. And a fear that what's going to happen now is that the Republican Party will do what they do. They're in the middle of a campaign. They're, you know, the convention started today. But the media will acquiesce to trying to convince people that the things they've been experiencing for the last, you know, 5-6 years didn't happen. Hmm. That the greatest purveyor and promoter of political violence, really, you know, since anyone can remember, since George Wallace, I think, you know, that we just haven't experienced that kind of open, you know, sort of citing or sort of incitement of violence or sort of luxuriating in the idea of violence. It's just not something we're used to anymore in American politics. And then we had to get used to that being a thing. Hmm. And people are concerned and expressing concern that we won't be the guardians of memory. Hmm. And that we will allow Donald Trump, as he is, you know, bathed in the glory and grandeur of his party, to rewrite himself as both a hero and a victim, that people who are the most vulnerable to not just the things he's done, but the things he's promising to do, and that that will then happen without a guardian saying, wait, stop, and then the media will acquiesce to this rewrite. And the people that I've been talking to don't accept the rewrite.
Absolutely flailing at straws there. There was not a single coherent thought in that whole spiel other than basically, I'm not going to stop calling Donald Trump Hitler.
Yes, genuinely. And that's it. This is what I'm saying. These people, even if you exile them from their cable news gigs, like Brian Stelter, even if you send them to some left-wing rag with barely any circulation, they won't stop because they've got the brain rot. They are true believers in this. They've been marinated like Crooks has since the age of 12. In this milieu that says Donald Trump is an existential threat and he is the second coming of Adolf Hitler. And so this rhetoric will not ramp down. And it's the rhetoric that almost got him killed. I don't see how there's a de-escalation of tensions in America. I genuinely don't. It's really concerning. And one more clip that illustrates this is Morning Joe. Right, so this is Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. They present the MSNBC Morning Show. MSNBC is just a hotbed of blue and on for some reason.
And it's known even in America as like the far left network.
Yes. On Sunday, they had their show pulled. They weren't allowed to present in the morning. They came back on Monday and they actually said live on air, we were really disappointed about how we had our show pulled. Next time it happens, we'll be bringing it up with the executives on air.
I wanted to briefly talk to our friends and viewers that watch us every day. And talk about what happened yesterday. We were told in no uncertain terms on Sunday evening that there was going to be one news feed across all NBC News channels yesterday. The Today Show would be Lester Holt, other people that you worked with on Sunday, and that was going to be one news feed across all NBC News channels. That we were going to stay as a network in breaking news mode throughout all day yesterday. That did not happen. We don't know why that didn't happen. Our team was not given a good answer as to why that didn't happen, but it didn't happen. We were also told it was going to happen throughout the day. And I guess after there was such a strong blowback about yesterday morning, I guess they changed their plans. And so those plans changed as well. So
we all know why it didn't happen. It's because you are unhinged. And sorry, I meant to say that they were off air on the Monday and brought back on the Tuesday, not on the Sunday. The executives didn't trust them not to go off script and start saying that Donald Trump deserved it, as Sky News did.
Didn't trust them not to get them sued.
Yeah, quite. And they're still threatening to do it now. Yeah. There is no reining this in. There is no containing it.
Well, they say they'll quit if it happens again. That's how you could, if you are the executives in all of these organizations and you recognize to a certain extent these people are just various talking heads that are easily replaceable, you could, if you're looking at it from a pragmatic perspective, go, I do not trust these people. to not say anything that won't put us in legal trouble, I'm going to get rid of them. The one way that this could be fixed for the executives is if they either put these people on an extended leave or fire them or basically get rid of them in some way, which to me would be a win for our side. Because, of course, how do you know that you're winning politically? Your enemies get fired.
True. Yes. But I don't trust them after Trump gets elected to rein in the rhetoric. I don't trust them to be sane. And I also don't trust them to practice messaging discipline because Joy Reid and Joe Scarborough are clearly not bright enough. They're clearly true believers in this. And just to finish on a contrast here, Andrew Neil, who himself has been an intolerable lib during the COVID crisis, calling for people to be mandatorily vaccinated. Yes, using essentially an anti-Semitic USSR slur to describe people who didn't want to get the COVID jab. He's made the point that, he says it's a salient point, America's most prominent right winger was shot. No riots, not a single shop window smashed, no buildings burnt. Not sure the same would be true if a major left winger had been shot. And that is the point.
I mean, we know what happens when a left wing icon overdoses on fentanyl on camera.
Yes, or attempts to sexually assault a woman, his baby mama, and then goes for a knife in a police car, tries to stab the police, and is justifiably shot, and all the body camera footage is out there. Kamala Harris actually goes and visits him in the hospital. So this is the point with this, right? There is no putting the woke away, because the woke will never go away, because they're not all Machiavellian. They're true believers. They actually believe that everyone is fundamentally the same, interchangeable blank slate, that it's just an unjust society, systemic racism, and not enough pool tables that is causing crime and inequality. And that Donald Trump coming back is the reminder that we could all be the same, but this is being interrupted. He is derailing democracy because democracy is on rails and should be coming to the same conclusion every single time. And so this is why the right doesn't do this, because we don't have these conversations in private, because we're not doing this in public, because we're not deranged, we're not a cohort of mentally ill people, we're generally quite well adjusted, we just want a nice peaceful society, to have our kids not molested, to actually have kids, to have families and have homes. And so this is why we will attempt to live in peace, and we will hope that they will ramp down the rhetoric, but I wouldn't put money on it. And I think Trump's life is still under threat.
Certainly, I don't disagree with you there. But with that, let's move on to some sunnier topics. Let's talk about the footy. Or we should talk about the Rumble rant that we've got through first.
And I'll talk about the Pence's best friend that's in
there. There is a fly in here that's been buzzing about for a good 30 or so minutes. We'll get it eventually, folks. Do you want to read out the Rumble rant? It seems like it's aimed at you.
It's Caleb Knight for $5. Hi, lads, and like five ladies here. I don't know if it means in the office. On the topic, none of the parties really care for democracy, just party dominion. On the Timcast appearance, how many lives were there? I found two. I don't know what that means.
I was hoping you'd...
Oh, right. Okay, so we did three shows, actually. So we did one on Timcast on Thursday night, then we did the culture on Friday morning on Tenet Media, and then I was also on the following Timcast with Kyle Becker the next day. Kyle was meant to be on, but he's old and had to go to bed.
Oh, he needed his extra sleeps.
Yeah, God bless him. He did have a long flight, so I don't blame him.
Fair play. So now that we've gone through that Rumble rant, let's go through to the footy. Hey, lads, was it coming home? It didn't come home.
I didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it either, but I know that it didn't end up coming home. It was quite a disaster. This probably won't be too long a segment. Samson just told me it was painful. I've no doubt. And I'm going to say no disrespect to the football fans out there, no disrespect to the actual players on the field. I'm sure it was an immense amount of pressure on their shoulders when they were out on the field. And I don't disrespect them for that. And I don't disrespect football fans. It's just not something that I'm interested in. What I am interested in is the media perception and the way that they present everything surrounding the Euros.
I would never disrespect football fans because generally they're very nice people. The football players are what makes me not interested in it, not just because it's long, laborious and boring, but also they started pretty much every match off with a knee to BLM after George Floyd died and then decided to wear rainbow armbands. The political signaling just makes it tiresome.
Samson, you seem to know what you're talking about. Were they taking a knee this time?
Okay, so the knee might have been rendered obsolete this time.
Yeah, so they might not have been taking the knee, but they might have. Samson doesn't remember exactly. Either way, we all know what the football was being presented as in the media. being presented as this big push for diversity, another propaganda tool to try and convince the masses that your history, your culture, your borders, none of them matter because brown man kick ball. But first, yeah, so we lost. Spain won. So it turns out diversity doesn't win
football
games.
I mean, I don't know. There is a black Spanish player there.
There is some diversity in the Spanish team, but as we'll find out, less.
Oh, okay.
Less, which if you're going to analyze it logically and you're trying to determine, well, how much diversity wins football competitions and tournaments, maybe dial it down a bit and maybe we'll have a better shot next time. That's all I'm saying here. So, yeah, we've got 58 years of hurt now because the last time we won was in 1966. They say in here, this was the second European Championship final in a row that Gareth Southgate's side have lost after falling to Italy on penalties in 2021 with their 1966, their only major tournament final before that. So it seems that a certain amount of diversity, again, judging by the logic, gets us to the semi-finals, but doesn't quite get us over the line. We need to find out the alchemical mix.
Maybe now that Gareth Southgate stepped down, they need to appoint a black manager. Apparently, they might appoint a female manager for the male football team.
A female black manager? I mean, come on, if we're going to go full diversity, we might as well.
Monroe Bergdorf.
Yeah, maybe. But either way, this got the typical kind of reactions that you would expect from people who have just had all of their hopes and dreams dashed, such as some amusing headline saying, woman carrying traffic sign kicked police after England's Euros final match. This is to be expected. People get very drunk.
Which city was this?
This was in Tottenham, I think. Or was it Hampshire?
Southampton down there, I said.
Yeah, oh, Southampton. Yes, there you go. And a Scottish newspaper got in trouble. The National got in trouble after making a light-hearted joke, but conceded that they crossed the line after they had a front page on Saturday, which was the day before England lost, featuring a mock-up image of Spanish star Rodri kicking an overweight, topless and tattooed England fan shaped like a football on a beach. The splash sparked a wave of criticism and was even reported to Police Scotland as a hate crime, which, I mean, you opened yourselves up for that, lads. I mean, we've got to be honest there. I will say it's interesting, the perception of how football works, because, of course, in the media, they push it all as being the football itself and the players is all about diversity, representing a multicultural nation, bringing people together without borders. But the average English football fan is still a fat, disgusting gammon who's probably racist and you have to hold in complete contempt, as exemplified perfectly by Lily Allen following the loss of the football game.
Wrong flag.
Yeah, a few things. Yeah, wrong flag. England, not Britain. It should be very, very simple. Also, again, a load of fat, overweight gammon drinking their beers.
All probably very nice lads.
Yeah, who are probably all really nice lads being upset at the football. That's not the message. That wasn't the message. I thought it was our team. It's our team. This is something that in the segment I did last week when I was talking about the football, I completely missed. I didn't know about this. This article is from the beginning of June.
Morgan Ofori. The hour there means non-white.
Yeah, exactly.
The writer is non-white. The people in the thumbnail image are non-white. The composition of the team is... There's a plurality of non-white players.
It's also rappers, not typically known to be white people, or if they are, terrible rappers for the most part, team up with the Black Football's partnership for a song calling out racism while backing England. So this is an entirely racial matter. This is an entirely specific and sectarian racial interest group here saying, we're for blacks, nobody else, just blacks, but we're going to say it's our team. And they made a rap song about it. And yes, I did listen to it. Yes, it was utter bollocks.
And that's saying a lot considering you like Limp Bizkit.
Hey, Limp Bizkit with the voice of a generation, Fred Durst is an icon and a musical genius, and you can never take it away. You have never written anything like as artistically relevant as My Way.
What's the one about hot dog water?
Chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water. Yes, another masterpiece. Up there with Beethoven. I can't keep this up, but I do like Limp Bizkit, all right? What was I talking about again? Football.
Race communism.
That was it.
Same photo.
Yeah, I suppose so. So let's hear what these people have to say about it. So what was the actual media discussion? So football and music are the biggest influences in the country. I mean, kind of a big influence in the country, not the biggest, but that was according to the artist Creason, also known as Cree Amory Reed, average British name. I think that they are vehicles of expression that have been put there for us to explore. The 20-year-old features on the recently released Euro 2024 anthem, it's our, capital letters, our team, alongside another up-and-coming rapper, Keaton Amory, Kepforta. The song backs England while calling out racism and has been produced by the Sheffield-based Toddler T, very strange name, in collaboration with the Black Footballers Partnership.
Sorry, that graphic there for the music video, I presume.
It's cancerous.
It's just visual noise.
It's
just a left-wing meme personified. There's just random buzzword phrases which have no coherence together. There's always too many of them. And what it actually translates to is equality, peace, unity. No, the most telling one at the top is the top left is just black footballers. This is
all we want. We just want more black football. I don't care if they're good. I don't care if they're the best at what they're doing. Just black. If we've got really good white footballers, we need to black them up.
This is race communism with egalitarian window dressing.
It always is. But yeah, I do warn you, if you do decide to go out of your way to listen to this song, you will get AIDS. And I will not be held accountable for this, all right? You know, I think they've got medication for that these days, so that's your own decision. The BFP co-founder, Delroy Carinaldi, says it aims to move the country forward through a united vision to tackle discrimination in football. So as always, again, propaganda. We're not doing this because of the love of the game or anything to do with actual sportsmanship. We're doing this so that we can show the fat plebeian gammon that he needs to be anti-racist.
As with everything you love, the fans are the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got Sun articles, diversity 1, racists 0. And this is, again, before we lost the football game.
I can't wait for the Empire Strikes Back chapter.
Maybe this is already it, but then again, you know...
We're doing our best to make it 1-1.
Yeah. England legend Paul Ince praises diversity of Euro 2024 squad and reveals his prediction for score in Sunday's final. And then there was the social media blitz that was going where people were saying England doesn't win without immigration. Now, Carl had a good point to add to this, which is, are we just going to keep doing this? Are we going to wait for third time to be the charm? Is this what we keep saying while we lose and get second place?
Weren't they all born here?
Well, I assume their parents or grandparents.
Yeah, sure. I get it. I mean, one, yes, they didn't win. Two, they themselves are not migrants.
Also, this picture appears to be from a pub, so yes. I wouldn't go there. If I saw this on the wall at a pub that I was going to, I think, nah.
It's from the Migration Museum.
What kind of a pub has graphics on display? Unless this person is working for the Migration Museum and this is just what he has to drink to get through a day of work.
Where are we betting this is? Shoreditch?
I don't know.
Brighton?
Brighton, Brixton, maybe?
Oh, yeah, possibly. Yeah,
maybe Brixton. And then, obviously, we lost. We lost. It didn't come home.
Womp, womp.
1966 did not repeat again. So... what's the new narrative? What's the new narrative that Britain, that England, has to give itself? Well, at least we won the moral high ground. Gareth Southgate's inclusive, caring England team is a victory greater than any on the pitch. No, it's not. If you're playing football, what's the point of playing the game of football if it's not to win the game of football? If it's just to show that you've got black people, what you do is you get them on the pitch and you stand them in a line and you go, look at all of our black people. And then the crowd stands up, round of applause, and then they all bugger off and go home. No, you play the football to win. I'm not even a football fan and I know this. I mean, good God.
Reminder, the last time we won in 1966 was with an all-white team.
I mean, yeah, but...
So just, yeah, there you go.
What's it all for if it's just to show that, yeah, we've got people with different skin colour? You can get the full colour swab out and arrange them in a line going from lightest to darkest and go, aren't we so impressive? And everyone goes, yep, and goes home.
It's just another beam in the architecture of the cathedral, Harry.
It's...
Okay.
Samson has apparently told us the last time they took the knee was in a World Cup match in 2022 against Iran.
Right. So what are we doing now? Because I heard it was take a knee for racism, then stand up for racism, then kick it out for racism. I assume it's going to be do the hokey pokey for racism next.
I mean, do a two-step for racism? I don't know.
Cha-cha slide for racism.
Maybe then they'd win me over, actually. But of course, Spain won. And what does the narrative have to be for them? Well, they won because they're diverse.
Well, the Spanish aren't white, I agree.
Further south you go, you know. But
sorry, Stelios.
Slightly less diverse than the English team. I think we had three or four diverse members. If you're qualifying diverse as non-European, which, I mean, these sorts of people always seem to, then they only had two diverse members. So it turns out, actually, again, qualifying the logic, less diversity equals more trophies. Or maybe there's just a perfect balanced mix. So in this article, they say 38-year-old, they've got a team of extremes, 38-year-old Jesus Navas. I'm not going to pronounce the names with an
accent. You wait for a Mancunian to try and speak Spanish.
To 17-year-old Uno Biro, por favor, love. To 17-year-old Lamine Yamal. The diversity of this squad is every sense is clear. Exciting young winner Nico Williams was born in Pamplona after his parents traveled across the Sahara from Ghana to make it to Spain. The semi-final hero, Lamine Yamal's parents, came from Morocco and Equatorial Guinea. Now, if you want to learn some interesting things about Equatorial Guinea, Josh has an article on the website about that. Before moving to Spain, where the teenager was born, two of the team's defenders, Aymeric Laporte and Robin Lenormand, were born in France. So they're Frenchies playing for Spain? I don't know, man. This whole borderless multiculturalism makes no sense to me. If these people are French, why are they playing for Spain? Surely they should be. I'm not going to question.
Also, now other European. So Europe is one big super state continent per the European Union, but also now other European countries migrating to other European countries counts for diversity. So does that mean we can fill all our immigrant quota from the Irish?
Maybe.
Again.
Maybe we need the most diverse team of all Irish players the next time we play the Euros. Therefore, we'll be 100% diverse, because as we all know, the Irish aren't white. Sorry, Connor.
Fair point. My card is in the post.
And again, one of the more telling ones about how it was supposed to be viewed by people was from NPR, saying about how soccer's diversity unites a divided Europe, sort of. And this is...
You can't have sort of unity, because that still means division. Listen, anything that isn't fully united is still divided.
Listen, accept the anti-racism, accept the gay race communism. Don't ask questions, all right? So they talk about the propaganda purposes of it. 4 weeks of fever pitch have provided welcome distraction from the malaise many Europeans feel about recent political gains of the far right. So according to this, the whole point of the Euros was the fact that far right are coming. We need to distract from that. French President Emmanuel Macron called early legislative elections after the far right, yada, yada, yada. You know how that went with the French elections. This inspired the captain of France's football team, Kylian Mbappe, classic French name. I think that goes back to at least Louis XIV. Turned to politics in a June 16 news conference and appealed to young fans to vote against Marine Le Pen's far-right party. We see the extremes are knocking on the front door of power. I want to be proud to represent France. I don't want to represent a country that doesn't correspond to my values or our values. What about its history? What about its heritage? What about its culture? No, it's just your values, which is more black, because I'm black.
Well, France will cease to be France when the house guests outnumber the host population. Because the entire reason the house guests came to the home in the first place is because how the homeowners kept it. So you're not actually representing anything. If your values and your people, I mean, you clearly conceive of yourself as not French because you conceive of yourself as having a migrant background and therefore not properly integrated. If you outnumber the French culture and the French native host population, it ceases to be France. So who are you playing football for?
I don't know. If the Robinson family household was entirely replaced by the Mbappes and the Robinsons didn't exist there anymore, you could still call it the Robinson household, right? That's how that works. It helps if you scale these things down a bit so you can really divine out the logic of what's being said here. I think that's how it works. But Mbappe said the results were catastrophic after the first round of French voting. And then he urged his French fans to go out and vote in the runoff. We can't leave our country in the hands of these people, he said on July 4th.
They might stop all the race riots.
So these people are just interested political actors. They act as mouthpieces for the regime. They are propaganda talking heads, as far as I'm concerned. Goes on. In Germany, meanwhile, the far-right Alternative for Germany party rejected its national team as being too ethnically diverse. In the European parliamentary elections, the AfD came second, nationally in first in Eastern Germany. Bring it up, East Germany. Bjorn Hock, who sits on the extreme right edge of the AfD, said he could no longer identify with the German team because it oozes rainbow ideology from every pore. Where's the lie? His dog whistle comments, I mean, it doesn't sound like a dog whistle, does it? He's just outright saying, I don't support this. It represents values that I hate.
I don't like gay race communism. Oh, what do you actually mean? Yeah.
We see through your veiled lies. Come on. His comments echoed the findings of a recent survey commissioned by public broadcaster WDR that suggested 21% of Germans would prefer more white players on the national team. Now, I think what you should actually do in that is replace the term white, which is the broader racial category, with German. Because surely the team representing Germany should be full of Germans, the same way as our mock prediction of the entirely Irish England team would also be ridiculous. I mean,
or the Japanese team that is full of the Japanese already.
They're behind the times. Mm. Behind the times. Terrible. Terrible.
Lacking enrichment.
We're here at the championship to play for everyone in the country, said German manager Julian Nagelsmann. Anyone at the top of their game can be a national player and give their all for our country, including anybody who isn't German.
Including all those Turkish nationalists living in Berlin.
So I assume that maybe Israelis can come over and play for the German team. Would that be sensible? I'm almost done, Samson. Don't worry. In a bid to promote diversity, his players sported a pink and purple uniform during the tournament, and the colours were chosen as a play on the word bunt, meaning colourful and often used in German to describe a society that is multicultural and LGBT gay. It has become the team's fastest selling away uniform, presumably so that people, you know, if they run out of toilet paper. But, you know, so it's not just our country. It's every country across Europe wants football to be a purely propaganda, a pure arm of propaganda to say, here's multiculturalism, here's diversity, here's everything shoved down your throats. And a lot of the fans don't appreciate it. A lot of the fans don't want it, but they're going to keep pushing it anyway. And football transmits this stuff into your brain and people still hoot and cheer for it, even if they boo when they decide to take the knee. So that's my perception of it. But of course, if you enjoy the football, no disrespect to you.
We got any video comments today? Yes, but I was just asking if we do. Okay, right, thank you. Okay, on to the Rumble rants. The Last Russian for $1. Need a female, gay, black, trans, disabled, and blind team manager. Harry, you're not thinking diverse enough. Minus 10 social credit tokens.
I won't be able to take public transport now. I've lost enough of those.
Yes, and he also says the political situation in France is one of the reasons for the Kylian Mbappe's poor form at Euro 2024, reports at Larry Parisienne with a link. Ah, yes, the pesky far right.
We only lost because of racism.
It's the ghost of Jordan Bardella just pushing that football 1 inch out of reach. And then $5 for Misery Averse. Did you hear JD Vance called UK an Islamist superpower? Yes, yeah. I was in the room. I was one of five Brits in the room actually watching the now vice president's speech. Seems like a nice chap. I'll be talking about it on my show later, as well as all the other stuff from NatCon. So without further ado, onto the video comments.
After the defeat of the British at Boston, George Washington moved the bulk of his army to New York City, where Congress insisted the capital be. New Yorkers are notoriously lax when it comes to fortifications, so when the Howe brothers sailed into New York Harbor, they occupied Staten Island unopposed before deploying their troops to Long Island. The British defeated the colonials at the Battle of Long Island, the largest of the war, and if not for General Washington's ability to preserve his army, Howe likely would have won the war right then and there.
Hey, I don't think it's unfair to say the New Yorkers are against fortifications. Look at the 2020 election.
True.
On to the next one.
A Gentleman's Observations of Swindon, Chapter 12. With the new town hall being built in New Swindon in 1891, a massive change was inevitable, and on the 22nd of January 1900, Queen Victoria signed a charter amalgamating New and Old Swindon into a single town. Swindon became a municipal borough on the 9th of November of the same year, and its population was recorded as 45,006 in the 1901 census. In 1903, a power station was built, which enabled a tram system to be implemented, but in 1906, a brake failure on Victoria Hill resulted in a crash in Regent Circus and five deaths. The trams were phased out and replaced by buses in 1929.
I think trams are way better.
I was going to say, I would do anything to pull up the tarmac from most town centres, reveal the cobbles, and get the tram systems back in place. Trams, again, I say this all the time, Manchester has its problems, but the tram system in Manchester works great.
One of the reasons as well for helicopter parenting is because of the prevalence of cars everywhere, because lots of people don't want to allow their kids and go out and play outside when they can get knocked down. It was a major impact. So if you replaced most of the transport in built-up city centres with a predictable tram timetable rather than infinity immigrants driving infinity Ubers, it would be preferable.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to this one.
The Liberals' hate speech bill is going through second reading in Parliament here in Canada. In particular, 321,001 here, indicating that anyone found guilty of committing a hate crime is liable up to life in prison. Additionally, 820,012 here allows the Attorney General's office to proactively charge you with a crime if it, quote, reasonably fears that you may commit the crime in future. Now, do keep in mind that our legal definition of hate crime and hate speech is inducing a, quote, felt sense of harm, meaning that the accusation of the crime itself is unfalsifiable proof that the crime has been committed. Somewhere in hell, Krylenko is salivating.
Yeah, we should probably get someone to look into that as well. I know the King's speech is today.
So that's that new law is basically just predictive crime. They're saying, well, you might predict, you might do a crime in the future, so we're going to arrest you for
minority report.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have someone look into that. Also, the King's speech was today. We need to fully unpack that because I know it's been read out as we're on air. I wouldn't be shocked if Labour in the first term sneak through their Islamophobia hate speech bill. So we'll stay vigilant on that because that's something that probably will come after us. Do we have any more?
Go. Oh, yep.
A simple exercise for the office rat so you don't get up looking like Quasimodo at the end of the day. Interlace your fingers, push your palms away, inhale yourself up. Reach the ceiling, exhale to the side, inhale back up, exhale to the other side, repeat a few times. And just for good measure, do a few spins, reaching forward, release, exhaling to the sides.
Carl was right when he said that all women like a bit of woo-woo. I'm not denigrating it. It's just an aspect of female nature.
That's just not what I was expecting you to say.
Oh, like doesn't your missus like crystals?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's just
and
always
she likes tarot cards. Girls are into all the mystical stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Right, this one is from Maureen Peters. I forgot to change the name.
All right.
Okay.
This is from Maureen Peters. Samson just
honestly,
messed up.
I don't
the
know
name.
What Ali Dawa is proud of. She's going to have her say with this whiteboard that I bought her. Okay, there's something my wife wants to say.
Because people like you, little weaklings, who leave their religion, the capital punishment in Islamic law will be applied to you. We have no doubt, and we're proud of that.
Yo, when we come to power, yeah, we're going to be chopping the heads off all the apostates and all the blasphemers, yeah? And I'm going to be sitting there eating the popcorn whilst I'm watching. She's too busy, yeah? Learning her ABCs. And we're proud of her.
Act 17 Apologetics is just masterful, man. Yeah, he's great. So good. He's one of my dream guests in here. He'd be fantastic.
That was really funny.
Okay, excellent. And with that, we'll go on to some of the website written comments. We've got a couple of minutes until we have to log off.
Yeah, we started a bit late, so... We'll...
Yeah, the trains. Sorry. Derek says, American viewer here, and I received my copy of Islander last night. I'm resolving to unplug each night. I'm turning off the phone and TV and read an article each night. Good plan. I try and do at least half an hour of reading before I go to sleep. That's the only time I get for comics.
It's so good for you to be able to switch off the electrics and switch off your attention from all of that before you go to bed. It really helps you to get to sleep easier as well. Because otherwise, all the distractions are right there in the palm of your hand.
Blue light screws up your circadian rhythm. It's awful. Tim Charters. Connor, you and Carl presented yourselves immaculately in your recent trip to the States. Were you watching? Well done, gentlemen. You did your country proud. Well, thank you very much. We appreciated it. There will be an interview with Wade Stotts coming out soon where Carl and I talk about politics and Christianity, and that was a very considerate conversation. You can go and watch our chat with the guys at American Moment. Carl's interview on GB News is fantastic, and we had a great time and ate lots of very good food and made lots of friends and had some interesting meetings, which may come to fruition soon. But anyway.
Yeah, Rue the Dastardly and Devious Fiend says, I actually appreciate the Lotus Eaters having opposing views on the same issue being broadcast while still remaining good colleagues. We had Dan making a lot of sense the other day. We have Harry and Colin making some sense today. Now we're left to make our own minds. Very good, fellas. Very good. Now, what I'm not saying is I'm not actually opposing what Dan said yesterday on the podcast. I think Dan made some very good arguments, but Dan was not arguing that the whole thing was staged. Dan was making the argument that the lack of security around Donald Trump and the holes in the security that there was presents to him the idea that it might have been, at the very least, intentionally incompetent.
Regime permission slip for someone they know that's out, that's been whipped into a frenzy by their rhetoric to go out and take a shot.
I mean, they literally tried to strip him of his protection earlier on this year. So if you're going to try and tell me or anybody else that they don't want him to get shot in a situation like that, or at least they did, now that it actually happened and they thought, hold up, could we get shot next? They might have had some second thoughts.
Hans, are we the baddies? By the way, watch
I don't think they think that.
Watch the unpopular opinions that Dan did recently on the Trump shooting as well, because it was very good.
It was very interesting, yeah. Maureen Peters, it was staged. Sue them for $1.5 billion as well. Absolutely. Maybe just hit it into, get the meme numbers out. Trillions of dollars. Throw that one out. The Flexicist, shoot me down if you must, but I think really think people are going over the top of the Tenacious D thing. It was a distasteful, off-the-cuff joke. It was essentially a musical comedy gig. People laughed. This is exactly the thing we defend when roles are reversed. Talking about things like deportation is a worse joke. Remember how we like freedom of speech. Listen, deportation...
Hang on, we like freedom of speech?
No, I'm not going to argue about that. Deportation is something that is going to be necessary if we want to return our countries to some semblance of what they should be, especially in Europe where... I mean, the countries are named after the ethnic population that exists within them. Obviously, we can't just deport everybody.
There are millions of criminal entrants that we know are here and don't have any right to be here.
Exactly. And in America, for instance, you receive millions of illegals through the southern border every single year. So there's going to need to be at least probably 10 to 20 million deported simply for being in the country illegally in the first place. This was a situation where it just happened the day before. Somebody died and it was an expression not of humor, it was an expression of what we know the Democrats and leftists already want, which is they were happy to see him shot at. They wish he was dead.
This is next time as well. Yeah. That's a threat to repeat it.
It may have been said in a jokey tone of voice, but that's like me holding a knife to your neck and go, I'm going to cut your throat. I mean, come on.
Hello, Lotus Eaters, out of context, I suppose.
I mean, come on. I'm not sad, especially given that, if you want to go with the same arguments that the left have been using the whole time, all of these venues are private businesses. If they don't want to take the risk of the insurance hit from having Tenacious D there, they don't have to. That's a business decision on their part. Same with Mr. Green deciding to drop him from his agency. At the end of the day, these people don't want the heat that comes with that. These guys are experiencing the consequences. I'm sick of conservatives turning around and saying, well, we need to have principles. The principles that we've had so far are lose. We lose.
They don't expend free speech consideration to us, so I'm going to hold them by their standard. I'm going to do one from my segment, and then we're going to sign off. Biggie Bigfoot, Connor, as a man of God, what are your thoughts on people saying that Trump's survival was divine intervention? Well, I tried not to read into signs too much, but I will say it's true that noticing now saves lives. And with that, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. We will be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But if you are a subscriber to LotusEaters.com, in less than half an hour, you can catch my show live, where I'll be going through all of the events at NatCon, the Tory leadership election, and the recent reshuffle at Reform with some insider information. Was planning to have some guests, but next time. And otherwise, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, Harry. It was fun.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.